Before I met Ajahn Phuong, my knowledge of Buddhist meditation came largely from books. And what they taught was you had to get the basic concepts down, understand what the different terms meant, and then observe your mind to see what the terms said was true. With Ajahn Phuong, though, the approach was very different. We didn't discuss basic terms. He gave me a little booklet on John Lee's method too. Told me to go meditate. And began to realize the basic approach was you learn a skill. In the course of learning that skill, you're going to understand what the teachings are all about. In fact, it's the skill that allows you to understand. You can't just understand through thinking. There is some understanding that comes through thinking. But the primary emphasis was get the skill down. The teachings that said you had to understand the concepts, it was all about learning that you are nothing but the five aggregates. The five aggregates are inherently suffering. And you'll see automatically that they're not worth coming back to. They're not worth desiring. When you're learning a skill, though, and I noticed this with Ajahn Phuong, you're very upfront about the fact that there is desire, and desire is going to be a necessary part of learning. It's okay to desire. As for who you are, that was left unanswered. I remember really, really being curious and beginning to read some of the books from the forest tradition, especially during my year back in the States. I had a copy of Ajahn Mahabua's biography of Ajahn Mun. Came to the last talk, where Ajahn Mun is talking about being a meditator is like being a soldier. The important part of the soldier's weapons, discernment, supported by the food supplies and other things that go into an army. I remember thinking as I was reading the passage, well, what is a soldier? And Ajahn Mahabua says, Ajahn Mun said, finally, the soldier is the determination to ever come back and be the laughingstock and the defilements ever again. So while you are learning the skills, you are the determination. You are the desire. Of course, remember the image that Ananda gives to the Brahmin. The Brahmin has come to him, Ananda, stay in a park. And the Brahmin asks Ananda, what is the purpose of this practice you have? Does it have a goal? And Ananda says, yes. The goal is subduing desire and passion. What's the path to that? And Ananda says, one of the ways of expressing the path is through the four bases of success, and it starts with desire. And the Brahmin says, well, in that case, it's an impossible path, because how can you use desire to put an end to desire? So Ananda cross-questioned the Brahmin. He said, before you came to the park here, did you have a desire to come here? Yes. Now that you're here, where is it? Well, it's gone. The desire has been fulfilled. He had to hold to the desire as he walked along. Then he let it go. Well, that's how we treat desire here on the path. It's okay to desire concentration. It's okay to desire insights. It's okay to want to attain nirvana as a future goal. All too often we're told that don't have any future goals, that it separates you from being fully in the present moment. But where did the Buddha say that being fully in the present moment is the goal? And where did he say that just accepting what comes up, having choiceless awareness, is how you practice? And that the practice is the goal. Nowhere. It's all about things you learn in the course of mastering the skills. Generosity is a skill. You're free to give wherever you want. But if you want to approach it as a skill, you think about where your motivation is, what the appropriate gift is, who the appropriate recipient is, what your mind state is before, during, and after giving the gift. And as you approach it as a skill, then you learn a lot. The same with virtue. But they're not just Sunday school rules that you have to be quietly obedient as you follow. You find you learn about your intentions when they run up against the precept. You learn that you have to develop skills of mindfulness, alertness, ardency. Mindful to keep the precept in mind. Alert to make sure that your actions actually are in line with the precept. And ardency, the desire to stick with the precepts even when it's difficult, even when you're challenged, even when it goes against your likes and dislikes. And especially how to hold, say, to the precept against lying when somebody asks for information that you think they probably might abuse. How do you not give the information but without lying at the same time? This is a challenge. It forces you to develop your discernment, your strategic mind. And of course, in the meditation, get the mind to settle down. You're going to learn a lot about the aggregates as you get the mind to settle down. We talk about the aggregates as activities, not things. The translation aggregate, vikanda, is kind of unfortunate. It sounds like gravel. But they are activities. And you see that the first aggregate is form. How is form an activity? Well, your form of the body, if you weren't breathing, you wouldn't sense it. It's constantly in motion. And there's an intentional element in the way you breathe. Without that intention, you wouldn't have form. The others are more obvious. Feeling is something you do. Perceiving is something you do. Fabricating thoughts is something you do. Consciousness, you may not be aware that you're doing it, but there is an intentional element. You're not going to find this until you get really well along the path, but without that intentional element, you would not have consciousness of the senses at all. You would not have consciousness of the present moment at all. Consciousness is something you do. It's not just an ultimate reality. It's an activity. But to get back to form, you see that your sense of the body really does dissolve away when the breath stops. It stops not because you force it to stop, simply that the breath energy feels so full in the body. You've learned how to breathe in, breathe out without squeezing the breath out, without squeezing it between the in-breath and the out-breath to make a little marker. The in-breath flows into the out-breath flows into the in-breath. And you breathe out with a sense of fullness. After all, the body feels fully connected inside. All the breath energy needs of the body are being met. And you find that you're not breathing. And you also find that you can stay there. And for a while, you can maintain the intention to be percipient of a full body, full of awareness. But then you realize if you drop that perception, that mental note, that mental label, that little image in mind, that there is a boundary to your body, it disappears. And that's how you get into the formless attainments. Not by going anywhere else. Just staying right here, but finding that the boundaries, sense of a boundary, just goes away because you're not breathing. When you're breathing in and out, that reinforces a sense of exactly where the body is, what space it occupies. And as for the desire not to be the laughingstock of your defilements, you find that that takes you far. It forces you to be circumspect. Come to realizations in the course of your meditation, and if you hold on to them, if you're not circumspect, they're going to blind you. Once this happens once or twice, you begin to get more wary, but also more wise. It's learning through doing, learning through acting on your desire. What can be attained through desire and where the desire has to be let go. You don't let go right away. Otherwise, as John Lee would say, you let go like a pauper. You don't have a Cadillac, so you let go of your Cadillac. We still don't have a Cadillac. You develop the inner wealth that's needed to get a Cadillac, and then you let the Cadillac go. It's there for you to use whenever you need it, but you don't have to lug it around. This is why the Ajahns and the Buddha talk without embarrassment about developing inner wealth, becoming wealthy inside, wanting to win a battle, wanting to master a skill, making the effort to search for something. It all involves desire, and there's a goal, and it's often in the future. But in learning how to live maturely with your goals, in other words, realizing that's where you want to go, but now focus on what needs to be done right here. That's how you get there. So be aware of the people who say, all you need to do is relax into the present moment. You're like that grasshopper that tells the ant, why work during the summer? The summer days are nice. There's work that needs to be done. There's a goal that's worth putting a lot of effort into attaining. It's not right here, right now, yet. Someday it will be right here, and there will be a moment of right now. But then it takes you beyond right now. That's something you can't attain at all by just accepting the present moment, approaching it without any desire. This is a path of skillful desire. This is a path that is understood through the effort of mastering a skill.